Coming up next is the Professor James McCanney Science Hour at the Crossroads. Now on shortwave, WWCR, frequency 5.070 at 7 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays, and also on Reality Radio Network Internet at www.realityradionetwork.com on Thursday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. And now, once again, here's your host, the Professor.
Good evening, January 18th, 2007, and welcome again to this show. Welcome new listeners every week. There are new listeners adding to the already fairly large group. As I say, my little show is not so little anymore. But at any rate, for those who are new, try to listen to some of the past shows that are on the archives, both at the network, Reality Radio Network, and also on my webpage, the jmccsci.com webpage, to catch up, get up to speed. These are very complex issues, and it takes quite a while to really understand what's going on in the universe we live in. Many of the issues going on in the science world, in outer space, in the space science world, in astronomy, actually have a lot of impact on the political world, and it's relatively complex once you start understanding what makes things tick. What's going on around you may make a little more sense. So at any rate, welcome new listeners. Tonight I'm going to concentrate on a couple topics, and of course Comet McNaught that came through the solar system this past week. What a tremendous event. Brightest comet in over 40 years and very poor publicity. I'll be talking about that. That's as interesting as the comet itself. And also a very interesting political game being played out right now amongst New World Order and their front agencies, one of them being the U.S. government run by the Bush CIA folks. And what's going on is very interesting, and these people have known for quite some time that things are not going real well for the hometown team. Let's put it that way. The New World Order, their plans have been basically sidetracked. The world is really on to what they're up to in their games, and there's a tremendous movement amongst many leaders of countries, especially what we consider third world countries, to basically stand in the face of what they call U.S. imperialism. But really what it represents, that's just, like I say, the front agency for the World Bank, which goes in and, of course, attempts to garner resources from countries by loaning them phony money. So at any rate, I'm going to start out talking about that because it relates to oil, and oil, the actual original source of oil, is one of the best kept secrets on the planet. Now, a guy named Velikovsky is the person who really identified through historical records that the oil came from above. It came from outer space, and thus it is all over the planet. It's all over the world, and we're actually finding that out right now. And this is playing into modern political scenarios because, for example, the Alberta oil, the tar oil up in Alberta, in the sands, what they call sand oil, or down in the tar Orinoco Valley region of Venezuela, the very rich areas. Venezuela has more oil than all of the Mideast combined, and now we find out that Alberta, the sleeping giant of oil, has more oil than Venezuela and the Mideast put together, over a trillion barrels of oil. And this is a very interesting scenario because it's like the oil barons, the mega U.S. corporations, which are now international corporations, have had a monopoly because of money, their association with the World Bank, their ability to go into areas and develop them and maintain a monopoly is ending. And it's this amazing chess game that puts the U.S. over in the Mideast. One of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons the U.S. has been involved in the Iraq War and wants to maintain the military there, because Gee, they're building permanent military bases right by oil pipelines. I wonder why that is. So they're getting free protection, but now they want to invade Iraq. I'm sorry, Iran. And guess where Tehran is? It's right in the path of where they want to put a pipeline from the Caspian Sea to the Gulf so they can get free oil out of there. The Russians are already pumping oil, and I've talked about this many times. The Russians are already pumping oil out of the Caspian Sea. There's a giant pool of oil at the base of the Caspian Sea, and all you have to do is stick a pipe down in there and start pumping, and you get basically very good quality oil. So now let's go back to the real source of oil. Oil is a result of the Earth repeatedly throughout history going through the tails of large comets. The hydrocarbons build up, they're formed in chemical formation processes in the electrical tail of comets. And you have to understand all the complex reasons why the Tier 1 and the New World Order people, the Tier 1 scientists, that is, who work directly, who have sold their souls to the devil, so to speak, and work directly for the New World Order, and which is fronted by the World Bank, and who's one of the other front agencies is what we call the U.S. government, and their police force, of course, is the CIA, which a lot of people don't understand. These complex issues, you have to understand this, but it comes back to the true source of oil, which is a science issue. Now, you understand that when the burning naphtha came in from above, and you can read about this in any historical record going way back, including in, for example, the Exodus, when the Israelites came out of Egypt, and the main cause of their having to leave Egypt was simply in the middle of the night when the catastrophe started to really hit. This is all very clear, and of course there are many people and many organizations trying to distort this history, trying to make the Great Flood into, say, a land dam that broke and flew. There was a flow of water from some imaginary lake in southwestern Asia down into the Mediterranean Ocean. No, the Great Flood came from above. It rained for 40 days and 40 nights, and all of the ancient literature is very clear on this. So to try and separate the Exodus, for example, and make it into some kind of political event is just distorting history. And there's a lot of people out there who are distorting history to the nth degree today to make sure that the public is detached from the true history that occurred at that time. And that's our last real historical record of oil coming in from above. Remember that in the 1200s, when the oil first started to be used in the Mideast, it was laying around in pools. Remember that much of the evidence of this in the United States was destroyed in the 1800s during the land rush as the settlers went across the prairies. And as Velikovsky said, all of the evidence of the Great Flood had been destroyed by the year, by the late 1800s. So that's why people can look around and say there's no evidence of this now. It simply was destroyed by the mass movement of humanity as they moved across the western plains and began settling and breaking ground and turning it into agricultural land, etc. But the first naturalists who came across this country knew that there was evidence of a great flood. And that's why, for example, I have the picture set on the CD, the Southwest American Pictures, with a lecture where it's a high altitude, very clear sky condition. The 110 pictures of the American Southwest, that CD is on my webpage, and I recommend highly that you get that, look at it, and listen to the lecture so you understand the remnants of the Great Flood and the Great Washes that occurred at the time when the old North Polar Cap melted. What we call the Laurentian Ice Shield or Laurentian Glacier, which covered much of North America. And during that time, of course, Siberia was a warm tropical climate. But back to oil, when the pole shift occurred about 30 degrees, the North Pole shifted from its original location about a couple hundred miles north of the state of Michigan, up, and it shifted during this cosmic cataclysmic event a number of thousands of years ago, estimated, well, I don't put dates on things. Of course, Velikovsky did, but you always run into problems when you try and put dates on it. But let's say that it did occur, more than likely, very highly likely, what did occur in historical times within the last 10,000 years. And there's a tremendous amount of evidence for that, including the mastodons frozen in the Siberian tundra, all of that, standing on all four legs, frozen with tropical plants undigested in their throats, all of those and dozens of other geological and earth remnant records that show that that in fact happened. So here we are in the year 2007, and a very interesting political game of chess is occurring over oil. Now, over 10 years ago, the oil companies, the big oil baron companies, the Mobil, Exxon, Chevron, and the laundry list of other major international oil companies, they stopped looking for oil. And I have this on the best authority of people who worked in and with the geologists in the oil industry. They actually stopped looking for oil over 10 years ago because they had found and located so much oil that the Earth could not possibly ever use it all. They knew about the Venezuelan oil fields and oil reserves. It was not quite well known regarding the Alberta. That's relatively recent, and this plays into this political situation right now. So I'm going to describe, without further ado, once I've given you this background on where oil comes from, it's all over the world. And I will give you some locations of vast oil deposits. One is off the north coast of Alaska. Large pools of oil in the ocean, at the bottom of the ocean. There are vast oil reserves in the North Sea off of England and off the north coast of, for example, Germany and up through Scandinavia. Vast oil reserves in the ocean, at the bottom of the ocean. These are well known. The tar and sand oils, for example, in Venezuela, in Alberta, and I would suspect also the Sahara Desert is very rich in oil, sand oil, down deep. The oil came in and then basically sank into the ground, and that's where you get these vast oil reserves. But basically, oil is all over the world. It's taken different forms based on the geology of the area after the oil came in. Much of it, for example, rolled off the Rocky Mountains and into deposits to the east and west of there. A lot of that rolled to the oceans when the water washed away. Remember that much of North America was covered with glaciated ice, and so the oil that occurred there rolled off much of the North American oil, actually ending up in the Gulf of Mexico as that tremendous wash occurred, and that's where much of the Gulf oil comes from today. So you have to understand the origin of oil and where it is today to understand the geopolitics. Okay, so let's bring us up to 2007 and the situation in the Mideast, where basically these major oil companies have been getting oil for free. They've been stealing it from Iraq, not paying the Iraqi public. Remember when Bush said, we're securing the oil fields for the Iraqi people. Hey, what a joke. The joke's on them because all the major oil companies have been stealing it for free. But they have their eye on the Caspian Sea, and that was the original source of the war in Afghanistan because they wanted to build a pipeline. They had agreed with the Taliban over there, who they put in power. The CIA got the Taliban in power to facilitate their placing a pipeline across Afghanistan, which is thousands of miles of open wilderness, and to bring that oil down to the ocean where they could then load it on tankers and bring it over to the United States. Remember that a large portion of the profit of major oil companies today from the Mideast, bringing oil from the Mideast, is in shipping, about 20% of the profits. So shipping oil is a huge part of the oil industry, and a lot of people don't consider that when they consider Mideast oil. What if you had oil locally, from Canada, like Alberta? There's no shipping. There's no ocean to bring it across, and no ships. So they don't want local oil. You take a state like Minnesota. Gets 95% of its oil directly from Canada. There's a pipeline that runs from central Canada down to Minnesota. That's why Bush and Cheney and a lot of the other Republicans spent a lot of time during this past election in Minnesota. It's very important to control Minnesota because it is one of the states that is could very easily become independent. It's the largest biofuel producing state in the nation. It has a tremendous amount of potential to produce more. It's one of the major wind producing states in the country. And I'll get into that in a few minutes with another topic, the effort to keep wind power from coming online. And Minnesota's food independence and is a highly technical state with a lot of industry here, developing computers, that type of technology. So it would be very easy for Minnesota to become independent, totally independent of Mideast oil. And Minnesota has two international ports, even though it's the centralmost state in the North American continent. It has the Duluth Superior support, which goes out the St. Lawrence Seaway, and it has the Mississippi River, which accesses the Gulf of Mexico through New Orleans. Very interesting state, and very close to becoming independent. There's a lot of manipulation in Minnesota to control, and it's the greatest water state. Hey, there's a lot going on here, and there's a lot of movement in the background to control all those resources and prevent Minnesota from becoming independent. But anyway, be that as it may, let's get back to the geopolitical situation around the world dealing with oil. Now, as I said, the New World Order bunch has left little George, what I call the little monkey, in charge, and he's got the world basically against, and the world has now recognized who the New World Order is, the World Bank situation. This past week, Venezuela, Chavez, who was inaugurated for his second term, formed an alliance with Iran, basically redirecting vast amount of resources to infuse money into third world nations to short circuit the World Bank from investing money and conning these third world nations out of their resources. And so it is a direct front on what he calls American imperialism, but he knows very well too that the CIA and the World Bank are all coordinating, and the American, what we call the federal government, really the administration that runs there, whether they're Democrats or Republicans doesn't make a difference, because the federal government really is the front agency in this part of the hemisphere, in the Western Hemisphere, for the World Bank, with the CIA thugs running interference for them, and the U.S. military being the strong arm. So when, for example, right now, they're insisting that there should be an attack on Iran because Iran is starting to deal in euros. And let's bring in a guy named Donald Trump. He's a good buddy of the Clintons and, of course, the New World Order people. And recently, Donald got a star on the Walk of Fame out in Hollywood. Well, isn't it interesting? He must be pretty preoccupied with the damage that the little monkey has done, and Condoleezza Rice and the other people who have devastated the world, New World Order policy. Remember, let's look at this whole situation from the view of the New World Order people. The Bush administration has destroyed their plans. Part of their plan, of course, was to bring the United States down to the level of a third world country, and that's in progress. But the other part of the equation was they wanted dominance of South America. That has failed because of the failed policies and the big mouth of the little monkey. So now they want to attack Iran. And they need Iran, one, number one, because the pipeline in Afghanistan has failed. It's not working. And they can't guard it over the thousands of miles of wilderness. So the only other path is right through. Look at the Caspian Sea and look at the Gulf where they have to bring the oil. And the shortest path is right through the city of Tehran, the capital city of Iran. So for the oil guys to get their oil, they have to attack Iran. They have to find a reason. And, of course, this nuclear threat. Why would they think Iran is such a threat when North Korea already has nuclear weapons and is already blasting them off? They're not doing anything about North Korea. So obviously, their reasoning doesn't make any sense. The obvious real reason is they need a pipeline to get that free oil out of the Caspian Sea before the Russians get it all, because the Russians are already pumping it over there. That's free oil. And you notice that the U.S. oil companies also in the Gulf, it's apparent that they're not even paying the royalties to the federal government. So they're getting free oil out of the Gulf, too. They don't pay anybody anymore. So let's look at the geopolitical situation. Iran has basically told Washington to get out, and so have the other nations of the Mideast. The political maneuvering is not working with other countries that surround Iran, including Saudi Arabia and Egypt, and the other countries are not in line with U.S. policy. They're not supporting. Britain, in fact, only has 7,000 troops left in Iraq, and they're pulling them all out. Japan has already pulled its troops out of Iraq, and Bush wants to bring on 20,000 more. The reason they want to do that is because they need a presence there to keep the free oil flowing to the oil companies. Very clear. So here is the scenario, and this is almost laughable. Bush, and who represents the oil industry and the oil industry interests, and of course the resource mongering of the New World Order and the World Bank behind all of this, wants a war with Iran so that they can cause problems in the Mideast, and that everybody knows would bring oil back up to, let's say, $100 a barrel, or possibly even more. So trouble in the Mideast means high prices for oil. And the U.S. military would be over there embarking on this effort. The only problem is Iran now is fairly well armed. I'm not a military strategist, but from what I'm hearing, Iran has enough firepower to sink every aircraft carrier we have in the Mideast right now, which is, I believe, five or six of them. And they have a new radar system, which they purchased from Russia a year and a half ago, which can detect our most stealthy aircraft and shoot them down. They have the rocket systems to go with them. So this is not going to be the cakewalk that has occurred in other past attacks. The situation now, therefore, is very interesting. If, here's the chess game that we're involved in. If the United States attacks Iran, driving the price of oil up to $100 a barrel, you have Venezuela and the Alberta oil fields, which would love it all the way to the bank. It's like the Washington front people have been playing a chess game where they have the dominating pieces, and there's only a couple other players on the chessboard, but now there are other players all of a sudden who brought all their players onto the chessboard. And look at the checkmate situation. If the United States does not attack Iran, then the Iranian oil will be traded through euros, and it goes to Russia, China, and India, Pakistan. It's going to everybody but the United States. And the price of oil is plummeting. They're struggling now to keep oil over $50 a barrel. Isn't that interesting? So where's the oil shortage? They're actually cutting production to try and hold up the price of oil over $50 a barrel. That's occurring right at this time. So they're desperate. They need some kind of event, and a lot of people think that the Bush boys are going to try another 9-1-1 and blame it on Iran. So they have a reason to go in there, because right now nobody's buying off on their nuclear reason to attack Iran. Plus, Iran's going to shoot back. They're not sitting there. They're not going to sit there and take this idly. In fact, it's hard to say what other countries may join in on this little war activity. So that's why they're sending Condoleezza over there to try and negotiate, and they're basically telling her to get lost. Now, look at the chess game. If they attack Iran, if they don't attack Iran, the price of oil is going to plummet. Which requires the oil companies to push Bush to attack Iran. If they attack Iran, Iran's going to shoot back. It's not going to be a pretty situation, and Baghdad is going to go ballistic. It's going to just go into a civil war that nobody could possibly control. And furthermore, it's going to help Venezuela and Alberta come online and sell all the oil. It will, the investors and the workers will be rushing to Canada, and they will pay workers any amount of money to come up there to get the oil out, because here's the other situation. The Alberta oil fields, when they started out a couple years ago and they had small-time investors, the big oil companies ignored it because they didn't think there was anything to that, because at the time it cost $55 a barrel, the same with Venezuelan oil, about that same price, to extract the oil out of the tar and out of the sand oil. Well, within a year and a half, they improved the processes, and now the Alberta oil only costs $13 a barrel to process. So in the greed of sending oil prices through the ceiling of the American oil companies, they forced the Alberta excavations to increase. The Alberta companies streamlined and economized their processes, and now are down to $13 a barrel. They have over a trillion barrels of available sand oil in Alberta. There's no shipping. It's not owned by the major American international oil companies. And you have Venezuela, which just nationalized its oil and threw out all of the international corporations also to be minority holders in those corporations. Are you starting to get the picture? Basically, the Bush administration, through its failed strategies, could have owned all of this. They could have kept the whole thing going and dominated the world. And now the whole world is turning against and the World Bank and federal U.S. policies. Remember, the federal policies that are in place have nothing to do with you and me. They have to do with the New World Order taking over and controlling people. The 9-1-1 and the Patriot Act, all of those things, the Homeland Security. And secondly, they have a lot to do with dominating world oil. They've failed on both counts. They are failing miserably. And countries like Venezuela is now aligning with Cuba. Imagine what Cuba has done. They have maintained their own currency independent of Washington. They have developed incredible medical and educational and dental facilities. Look at somebody in Cuba. You don't see rotting teeth. You see people with beautiful teeth. You see good health, and they take care of their elderly. They have good food, and they have the ability to take their education system and move it into Venezuela, and those things are happening as I speak. So Cuba has a tremendous item to trade, its cultural development in Latin America, and that's something that the New World Order never understood and never had a policy to deal with South America. Their policy was like with any other third country. We'll go in, we'll send our CIA in, we'll dominate the government seats, and then we'll get all the resources through loans from the World Bank. Standard procedure, but it didn't work. It failed. Chavez came back and was elected for a second term, and now the world, the alliances between Iran, the Middle East, Chavez is the head of OPEC. So if you look at the world situation right now, the little monkey has really failed, and this is the point I want to get to. I cannot imagine the New World Order leaving Bush in office any longer. They got to get rid of him, and even if they did let him go to the end of the term of his office, they couldn't let him out on the street afterwards. They're going to have to get one major league babysitter to take care of the guy, because he's just an idiot. You know, they can't let him out to buy a piece of bubble gum. So at any rate, that's why Condoleezza Rice looks real worried today, because they are on their last legs with the New World Order, not with you and me. The people that call the shots, the people that run Washington, the people that run it from the European banks, are very angry at Bush, the little monkey. And that's why the old man Bush, was crying a couple weeks ago at Jeb's birthday party or whatever that thing was, or when he was leaving office, whatever that was. He wasn't crying because of tears. That guy could, he could kill 100 people and wouldn't bother him a bit. That's my opinion. And he was in the CIA in South Vietnam, in Cambodia, when all the torturing was going on. Those people are extremely cold people. So to see him cry, there is some other reason. Now it's very clear that the reason he was crying is because he saw the Bush power cycle ending. That's why he was crying, folks. And to have Donald Trump repeatedly point to Condoleezza, his comment was, stop waving and do something. Now, Donald Trump has his money wrapped up in the U.S. dollar. And if the U.S. dollar goes under, Donald Trump goes under. Remember, if Donald Trump loses 1% of his wealth in a day or two or in a month, that's more money than you and I make in our lifetimes put together. So he's very concerned about the U.S. dollar, which is failing. There are many other people who are seeing this in the economy. So at any rate, there's some forces at work here behind the scenes. And I doubt very much I won't make predictions, but this all comes back to the fact that there is oil every place on the planet Earth, and people are starting to figure that out and extract it. As I said, Alberta has has over a trillion known barrels of oil, and they can get it out now at $13 a barrel. So even if they had a dollar profit per barrel, which they have much more now, that would be $1 trillion worth of profit. So you can see why the other countries are struggling to keep the price of oil over $50 a barrel. But with Canada coming online, that's going to be very hard to do. So at any rate, I'm going to stop talking about that and move on to Comet McNaught. But this was very important, because the reason I'm bringing this up is because the New World Order has to do something. The Bushes are desperate, extremely desperate, and when people like that are desperate, they do desperate things. That's why I'm telling you, because I think personally that they're going to try and pull something here very soon, because that's the only thing they know how to do, cause chaos, cause damage, and that they think will allow them to control a bit longer. But the world has gotten wise to them, the 9-1-1 events, the Pearl Harbors, so to speak, that keep them in power, are not going to keep them in power any longer. So the chess game is against them. I already think the checkmate, as in a game of chess, many times you see the checkmate coming a long way down the road before it actually hits, but you keep playing, and that's what's going on right now. The checkmate is coming fairly soon for these people. And as I said, that's why old man Bush was crying, because he's gotten the word that the curtain on their show is about to fall. Okay, just a quick note on a couple other topics here. Sorry, I'm looking through my notes. Okay, let me go on to Comet McNaught. And I'm going to start out by talking about the worldwide weather and how could this comet, the brightest comet in over 40 years, and we have seen some very bright comets. Comet Hyakutake was not an especially large comet, but it was close to Earth, not damagingly close, but it was visually close to Earth. And in fact, it was a very bright comet for us to watch. The comet Hale-Bopp, of course, was in the night sky and the daytime sky for many years. And so many people remember seeing that. Comet McNaught, the brightest comet in 40 years. In fact, Comet Kohoutek was a fairly bright comet, observationally. So it's very interesting to note that the comet McNaught . The point is, how did this comet sneak up on us? How come it was only discovered in August of 2006 when it had been coming in for many years? And I'll talk a little bit about the logistics of that. But first, I want to talk about the amount of haze in the world today, the amount of water haze, and this has been going on for many years, but the world temperature is increasing. And what happens is there is an increased amount of evaporation from the world oceans and water sources, causing increased moisture, humidity, water vapor in the atmosphere. And when the comet McNaught was becoming visible, about the 10th of January, in that time frame. And by the way, nobody announced this in the major news media until after the period of observability of this comet had passed. And that was an objection of a lot of the public, that how come we didn't hear about this until after the comet visibility window had passed. But at any rate, for most of the planet, you wouldn't have been able to see it anyway because of the cloud cover. And most of the United States, most of the rest of the world was basically, would not have been able to see the comet due to the cloud cover, except for a fleeting few areas. The comet was so bright, it was actually photographed in the daytime sky. Some of these pictures are on the internet. But where did the comet come from? From the south, very near the region that Harrington of the Naval Observatory back in the 90s, where he was looking for Planet X on the NASA-funded Search for Planet X project that ended in about 1992, that ran from the early 1980s up into the early 90s. It was actually a funded program by NASA run by the Naval Observatory. The head of the program was Harrington out of the Naval Observatory. And, of course, we all know the story where he went to New Zealand to take the final pictures, and, of course, the data never came back, and neither did he, at least breathing. But be that as it may, this comet came out of that same region of the sky. My estimation is that there could be more comets coming in, and they simply don't want to make a big deal out of these comets. Even though this would have been the brightest comet in nearly 40 years, as the final report occurred. So here we are wondering why or how this comet could sneak in on us. And remember the claims of astronomers, professional astronomers, stating that, anything big wouldn't sneak up on us. Professional astronomers would see it, and they would tell us. And by the way, there's all those amateurs out there who would see it, too. Well, let me explain something. I went through the orbit of this comet, and let me get out my notes here so I get the dates correct. Let's see. Oops, I got to go down to a different set of notes here. Okay, here we are. January 22nd, 2008, if Jupiter were in that location where Jupiter right now is moving in its orbit. So we are just about a year away from Jupiter being in the exact location where the comet passed Jupiter's orbit. And the comet passed the orbit on, I believe, in June of 2006. Now let me see. I'm looking through my notes here. Sorry, I have a lot of notes on this. And by the way, I was a guest on Coast to Coast after my last week's show. It was arranged somewhat at the last minute, so I wasn't able to announce that. But I was the guest on Coast to Coast last Thursday night and dealing the first hour with this very comet, Comet McNaught. In June here we are. Okay, sorry. Finally found my notes. May 11th, 2006, the comet McNaught crosses very close to Jupiter's orbit and then moves in, and from that point on moves above the ecliptic and is just above the ecliptic and to the left of Jupiter in the night sky. All summer long, 2006, and amateurs all over the world are looking at the night sky, looking at Jupiter, scanning the sky in that region, and nobody saw this comet, the brightest comet in 40 years. Nobody saw it. Not professionals, not the NASA automated search telescopes, not the military automated search telescopes for near-Earth objects. None of them saw this in the dark night sky, because Jupiter at that time would have been right in the middle of our night sky. So here we are, all of the telescopes around the world, professional, amateur, and otherwise, did not see this coming. It was finally discovered in August at the end of the summer when it was halfway from Jupiter into the inner solar system, halfway to the sun, in fact, more than halfway to Earth from Jupiter. It was finally discovered by an automated telescope in Australia operated by an astronomer named McNaught, who has had many comet discoveries. So at any rate, if Jupiter were a simple 1 year ahead of schedule, then it would have captured this comet and we would have a new member of the solar system, just like happened with Venus many thousands of years ago. And as Venus became a member of our solar system, my calculations show an estimate that it probably took about 600 to 1,000 years for Venus to wind its way through the solar system, encounter Mars once, where it alleviated Mars of its oceans and atmosphere, and then passed in and had two encounters with Earth as it moved into the orbit where we see Venus today. And this is what Velikovsky talks about. This is what the ancients talk about. This is what the Colburn talks about, the ancients seeing this. And by the way, speaking of the Colburn, there's some nutcases running around the internet saying that the Colburn predicts the Mayan calendar date of 2012 to be the arrival time of Planet X. And there is nothing in the Mayan calendar that says anything about that. There is nothing in the Colburn that predicts 2012. So you got some real idiots running around distorting these topics, so you can pretty much ignore those and look at the source. These are a bunch of charlatans. All they've ever done is try and copy the material from other people, legitimate people's websites and information, and then distort it into some kind of bogus, garbage. So all I'm telling you is, if you want the real Colburn, the site is ChaldeanTrust.org, C-U-L-D-I-A-N, Trust.org. And if you've by chance gotten or see this, it says Colburn and it's got a big orange ball planet on the front, that's the bogus imitation one. Send it back. Get your money back. It's a bootleg imitation garbage version, and it does not reflect the real Colburn. So on to the topic, though. The point I was making was that the Earth was enshrouded in haze and water haze. And this is why, when in the historical records they talk about the comet slipping up on them unnoticed, this is what happens. And remember that any Planet X type object coming in from the far reaches of the solar system is going to appear as a comet, not some big orange-red ball like they have on the cover of this phony Colburn, or not as the phony Zeta Quack stuff that was going on years ago, where they repeated that you look up and see a big orange ball. Nothing could be farther from the truth. You're going to see a large comet. And so, sorry about that. At any rate, sorry for the interruption here. You're going to see this as a large comet. Now, let me go on to some more details about Comet McDot. So it did come in from the base, the southern region of the solar system, below Taurus, the constellation Taurus. It was down there. In fact, the direction it came in was where Earth would be aligned with the Sun in that direction on June 19th. That would be the date when Earth is in the position relative to the Sun on June 19th. That's the direction that the comet came in. The Harrington, the view that Harrington was looking for was in the month of May. So very close. And when astronomers try and put in orbit on Comet McNaught, if it was part of the entourage of Planet X, one of the precursors, it could be very loosely attached as gravitationally to the, say, the large Nibiru Planet X object. And once again, I don't know for sure. We don't have good data, and this is the exact point, is that these objects become enshrouded in a cloud and become very difficult to see. That's why these large objects can sneak up on us undetected. And as one of my friends always says, coming in unexpected but sure. So a little more detail on Comet McNaught. After it crossed the ecliptic coming up by Jupiter's orbit, it was in the night sky to the left of Jupiter all summer. It's discovered in August 7th of 2006. And at that point, not a lot of fanfare, even though the orbit became well known very quickly. And it was known that this comet would be very visible, potentially, to the general public in the time frame of January 2007. And it never made the major news media until after that window of visibility had ended. Very interesting. And also, it's after the comet had passed, and it was obviously in the picture in the window of SOHO, the biggest comet we have ever seen, including Comet Neat B1, which occurred a couple of years ago. And of course, I said that this could interact electrically with the Sun, especially when it passes through the ecliptic, and I gave the time frame of late Saturday, January 13th, and then into the morning of January 14th. Well, very interestingly enough, NASA, just as that ecliptic crossing of the comet occurred, NASA cut all the camera feeds from the SOHO satellite, all of them, and held the pictures for a period of 8 hours, and so we cannot trust the pictures that SOHO finally came up with. Magically, all the pictures reappeared on the page at 8 in the morning, so while the United States was sleeping, NASA was busy doctoring those pictures. And as I said, after the Neat V1 fiasco, where they doctored the pictures, they were obviously discovered internationally, all the web pages knew it, etc., and that's something that I, of course, spearheaded with my show and with my postings on my page, NASA came back and posted this stupid little comet coming across, obviously photoshopped into the picture, and then they blamed it on a graduate student that was just playing a little prank. So after that, we got together, some of the people I talk to regularly, and we figured that if a big comet ever comes through the solar system in view of SOHO again, NASA will have some much better Photoshop software to doctor the pictures. So do you trust NASA? Ask me if I do. You better believe you know what the answer is there. So NASA, holding the photos from all of the views, the X-ray views, the the X-ray views from SOHO, the C2 and the C3 visible cameras, the C2 being the narrow angle, the C3 being the wider angle view of the Sun. And in spite of that, the comet did have ongoing electrical discharges, very clearly noted, and I have a picture on my webpage right at the top, jmccsci.com webpage, showing one of the solar extensions coming out of the comet, you have to know that NASA had tons of other equipment looking at this comet, the X-rays, observatories, etc. And, of course, none of that data available to the public. Now, the interesting thing about this comet and its extensions to the sun, the electrical extensions, when Comet Hale-Bopp came through the solar system, it had a very bright sunward extension as it crossed the ecliptic. And it just so happened that Earth was in a plane, the orbital plane of the comet, the Earth was passing through that, and NASA used the excuse that, oh, this is just debris that comes off the comet, and that's what we're seeing in this sunward spike, the debris coming off the comet. Well, with Comet McNaught, you cannot use that argument because we were at a side angle. We were broadside to the plane of the comet orbit. And in fact, it extended spikes to the sun. So you find NASA very mute and mum about the fact that we saw those extensions. The extensions both pointing towards the sun and in the anti-sun direction. The electrical discharge is obviously a result of the comet discharging the solar capacitor. Question, how big was the nucleus of Comet McNaught? I would say probably it was the size of maybe half of our moon. It was large. It was very large, maybe the size of Pluto's moon Charon, but be that as it may, it was very large. So the question is, how could a large object like this sneak into our solar system unannounced, unnoticed? At any rate, there's many more topics I could talk about this comet. It's on its way out. If you're in the southern hemisphere, you'll probably get another view of this comet. And, of course, we're not going to hear any more from NASA, as I said, because I think there are other comets coming in, and they simply don't want to make big news out of these comets because, as I said before, the one thing that will take the public's attention away from government, away from the so-called leaders, is one of these big objects or multiple big objects in the sky. And people will realize that, hey, that ain't no little dirty snowball, and it's doing some pretty drastic things up in the sky. You can see them in the daytime sky. So if some of these big objects start coming in, especially multiple comets, people are going to drop what they're doing. They're not going to want to pay their house bill or insurance or worship the federal government because they will know instantly that the federal government can't do a thing about this. And by the way, just a little other aside, there are people who say we should not tell the people, the public, that such an object is coming because there would be a mass panic. I totally disagree. If people knew in advance, they could prepare, they could do their best effort at preparation. And by not telling them, when the public does find out, it's like a kid that gets away to college for the first time. He's going to go bonkers because he's been controlled. And that's what's going to happen with the public. You are guaranteeing a mass panic when the public finally does look up one day and realize that, number one, NASA knew about this all the time. The federal government knew about it. The New World Order knew about it. And they didn't tell you. Now, to all the professional astronomers out there listening, and I thank you for listening to my show, although you dislike me tremendously, I know they're all out there listening, so that welcome to the show. But to the public, those guys are not going to tell you, and this is a perfect example, because I guarantee you that the professional astronomers, the ones that had access to equipment, some of them knew about this probably years ago, about Comet McNaught, and didn't tell you. So whether they saw it and didn't tell you, or whether they didn't see it, and didn't know anything about it, and failed to locate this huge, largest comet in 40 years. Either way, they're not going to tell you, and you're not going to find out in advance. Now, just a quick topic as I roll up to the final minutes of the show. Going back to the topic of energy, here's just one example of energy companies trying to keep wind power out of the system. Minnesota has right now a company called Xcel is the primary energy Corporation used to be Northern States Power when it was a utility company, but remember, all the utility companies were purchased by private corporations. They're no longer utility companies, they're private corporations for profit. And the Xcel has proposed a $900 million addition for a coal-burning plant. The Xcel coal-burning plants right here, right now, are the 11th most polluting coal plants in the country. And they want to expand to, number one, they say clean up their act and put in better scrubbers, but they want to bring in a new installation or an additional installation that will service 160,000 new homes. And the price tag on this new facility, $900 million. They want to run it through the state of Minnesota government, and they're already getting rubber stamped on it, of course, through the Public Utilities Commission and the EPA, who is supposed to be monitoring your safety. But let's look at what you could do with wind power. Minnesota already has a tremendous wind power facility down on what is known as Buffalo Ridge, which is a tall escarpment that covers southwestern Minnesota. By adding 53 wind towers, 1.5 megawatt wind towers, each wind tower capable of powering 3,000 homes, if you do the math, at $1.5 million per wind tower, which is initial investment, it would take 53 wind towers at a total cost of about $80 million initial investment to bring on the wind power to power the 160,000 houses that Xcel claims it needs to develop power, to provide power for these houses. $900 million to build a coal plant versus $80 million to build the wind towers to provide the energy to those same houses, totally pollution-free. The state, guess what, is going with the $900 million coal-burning plan. Don't tell me these companies don't have their back hands, or the politicians don't have their hands in the back pockets of these companies, because I wouldn't believe you. The EPA, the PUC, the Public Utility Commission, the Environmental Protection Agency are agencies for the corporations, just like the federal forestry is owned by the paper companies, just in the wood industry, just like the oil industries own the federal offices where they register the claims and don't pay any fees for the oil they extract, for example, from the Gulf of Mexico. At any rate, isn't the world a lovely place today? Just imagine what this world could be like if it were actually run according to sound environmental principles. We could have all the wind energy, and I, of course, believe in Tesla power, but wind energy easily could solve our solutions, and I wouldn't be putting up these three-bladed, very inefficient systems that are being put up today. We have much better solutions, much more efficient, much higher power solutions for wind energy, and we could, for example, the southwestern states, and also electrical collection of electrical energy from storms, turning storms into energy. I'm out of time. Once again, this is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.